Now, what does VIDE stand for?
Visualization Interaction Research.
Wow. Where does the B come from?
Oh, it stands for Business and Entertainment. But we do a whole range of things. So.
Okay. So Visualization, Interaction, Business, and Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are busy. This is Patrick Bowdich. He's one of the researchers in the VIDE group. And you want to introduce the rest of the folks here?
Sure. This is Greg Smith.
I'm a software engineer in the VIDE group.
Great.
And these are two of our interns. This is Stu Hutchins.
Hi. I'm an intern in VIDE.
All right.
And Bongxian Li.
Hi. My name is Bongxian Li.
Wow. What universities are you?
I'm with Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech?
Yeah.
I'm from the University of Maryland.
Wow. Oh, cool.
We've prepared a couple of demos for you today.
Excellent.
Okay.
How would you like to show us?
Do you guys want to go first? Or?
Nope. No. Are you set up over there? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is a demo called Drag and Pop, and the purpose of Drag and Pop is to help users of very, very large display surfaces to access their material across long distances.
Right.
So here's what happens. This is actually not the biggest thing we've tested this on. We tested this on a display three times that size. And sometimes people have trouble accessing something that's really high on the ceiling because they can't reach it far. Sometimes something is down the hallway, really far away. And sometimes people need to get across these bezels, which is also kind of difficult. So here's how we do it. I'll show you how to drag the summary into this recycle bin. So rather than dragging it all the way across, what I do is I just start dragging this icon towards the recycle bin. And as you can see, the recycle bin comes to me, and I can drop this in here. And the moment I let my finger go, it snaps back, and the recycle bin just ate my Word document. Let me show this again. I can drag this into this direction. And it depends on the direction I'm going. I can drag this up here, and as you see, now the My Pictures folder and the Word application are coming to me. And again, here, if I'm dragging down here, for example, it's Internet Explorer that's coming over. So, but just choosing a drag direction, I make a pre-selection. And as you see, depending on the file type, I get different responses. In this case, it's the recycle bin and Excel that are coming over. If I drag it up here, it's just a folder. So we basically make a pre-selection based on the data type that we have, that only the icons of the matching type are coming over. In addition, we're using these rubber bands so that people are standing really close in front of the display wall get a very good idea of where material is coming from, and the shape of the rubber band suggests that they're very elastic. So the moment I let this go here, you have the impression that it actually snaps back and took the icon with it.
See, but you don't need a touch screen to do this, right? This is something that's helpful on any big display and helpful like if you have multi-monitors setting on your desk as well.
Yeah.
Just so that you don't have to do, you know, skate to get from one side. You know, otherwise, you're going to have to start shipping really big mouse pads with everything.
Absolutely, yeah. Right. I think a lot of the things that we do here address like wall-sized displays, but we often find that they're actually applicable to other situations as well. In this case, for example, it works for a tablet computer docked to an external screen. So the moment I'm scribbling on my desktop computer and something happens on the external screen, well, usually I would have to drop my pen and get out the mouse to access this additional screen because the pen doesn't work there. And techniques like drag and pop and a follow-up technique that we call tablecloth actually allow me to bring the material from this external screen onto my current display, and then I can use the pen to close this dialog box and to interact with my material there.
Do you have tablecloth set up over here?
Actually, we don't have.
Let's see.
So right now, I set up a scalable fabric. Should we do group bar first?
Let's do scalable fabric.
Okay. So this is called scalable fabric, and this is a big tripod. Okay.
I can do a little bit zoom.
Monopod.
Okay. So what?
So, okay. So Scalable Fabric is a project that's spearheaded by my colleague George Robertson. And what it does is it asks the question, do we need this distinction between the 2D desktop and the one-dimensional taskbar? So with Scalable Fabric, as you can see here, I've got these miniature windows in the periphery. And I can just click on one, and that means I restore that window, I can drag it around, I can do stuff with it. And when I hit minimize, it shrinks back into its peripheral position. So compared to Windows as we do it today, where you have the one-dimensional taskbar, like the one here, which would actually disappear in this scenario, we use a two-dimensional layout for our windows. So again, I can restore this window, and I can identify. And as you can see, I can group these windows also into something we call a task. So these two icons right now are grouped into a task, and I can click the marker. And the moment I do this, as you see, both of the windows get restored at the same time. I can lay them out as I like, and then I click on this other one to add another one. So it's a bit more flexible than a virtual desktop manager.
So you guys do real user studies with real life users in here, in this lab, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that.
So what happens is we bring in external participants. Microsoft has this really elaborate hiring process for these people to make sure that they are not biased, that they have not seen any of the prototypes before. So in this room, when I'm running an experiment, I would be sitting here and I look through the one-way mirror. Again, this is something that helps us reduce the impact that we as experimenters have on the participants to make sure that, you know, we don't influence them without our will. And so from here on, I can administer different experimental tasks, and I can view the participants. And that's kind of how I do it.
That's what research is. It's testing a hypothesis.
Absolutely, yeah. So, for example, in the case of Dragon Pop, we had two conditions. We used Dragon Pop and we used regular mouse dragging. With the pen in this case, everything is counterbalanced to make sure that the order doesn't affect the outcome. So some participants would start with Dragon Pop, others would start with regular dragging. We make sure that they use the same data sets. So at the end of the experiment, we collect the data, and then we can basically say, well, the only difference between the two conditions was one allowed this Dragon Pop cell, the other did not. And then we can say, yes, Dragon Pop accounted for a speed up of a factor of 4.
So how many participants do you usually have in one of these user studies?
That depends a lot on the style of the study. For things that are very, where all people are very much the same, and Dragon Pop is one of them, or like something we did with like high density cursor, very basic things where it's basically about clicking on a button or something like that, you're usually okay with a very small number of people. They do a lot of repetitions. If you have something more complex, for example, like task management with scalable fabric, you tend to take more participants to make sure that you cover the whole range of different individuals that are out there.
And so what do you do with the results of the user studies that you do?
User studies have a couple of really interesting results. So first of all, it usually helps us improve our design. So we typically run a couple of pilots first. And in that stage, you know, we run a pilot, we see, you know, that participant actually had problems with this. We do a new design iteration and we run again with another pilot. The second thing is it helps us communicate the results to people who are not involved in the project. So, for example, when we talk to product teams, you can say, this is the technique for this type of task and for this type of data. We get this type of speed up, and the error rate is affected this and that way.
So it helps the tech transfer.
Absolutely.
You also publish papers.
And we publish papers, yeah. So it's part of our job to get recognition from the research community, which is really important because these are really smart people that give us more input about the stuff that we do. And, publishing and going to conferences is a very important thing.
Right. A lot of the work you do here is designed to make sure that the product is ready to go in the marketplace too, right? Because I was talking about this on my blog, if you guys released a new 3D interface, for instance, mm-hmm. and it has a lot of tech support problems, that greatly increases our costs.
Yeah.
Right?
That's something that our product groups probably do more than we do here. A lot of what we do is sort of more, you know, user studies on components that, you know, in and of themselves are really not ready to be released out as a product. It happens mm-hmm. to sort of go over to a product group who knows sort of how to build it out, maybe even incorporate an existing product before it would get out there. So,
okay.
But, you know, we try to be super open with the results of the work that we do so that the larger research community can not only vet the work that we do, but also, you know, pick it up and build on top of that and take it to the next step.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for your time.
Yeah.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So one last group we're going to visit. We're going to go down the hallway, right at the other end of this hallway.
All right, we're going to see the group bar?
Oh, sure. Okay, we can show real quick.
Hey.
Look here. This is a very cool demo. We've got definitely
demo.
Should show up before we get out of here.
So what is this?
Oh, these are.
Set up a few initial groups there.
And they don't have icons. No, they do. Well, okay. So here's a project called Group Bar. And the mastermind behind that is Greg Smith. And let me show you a couple of things here. So you've seen this before. At least you've seen something that's very similar, and the similar thing is called the taskbar, which is just a standard component of Windows. So what we did different here is that, as you can see, we've got these green tabs here, which you usually don't have. And how these are created is normally all these things are separate from each other. And so what I can do is I can drag one of these tiles, and as you can see, the moment I drag this next to these other icons and I let go, they start forming what we call a group or a task. So the difference now is usually I can only click on individual windows, but now this tab here gives me the additional power to work on a whole group of things at the same time. So I can click on this tab, and that brings the windows from that group into focus. And if I click on this one, it brings all the windows from that task into focus. And also, when I right-click, as you can see, I get a couple of additional functionalities. For example, I can say minimize this group, restore this group, or I can assign a layout. For example, I can go in and say, you know, tile these on my screen. As you see, with a single action, I just tiled all these five windows across my screen with a big one in the middle and the others tiled on the additional screens. So group bar is aware of my multi-mode situation, and it understands that it's not supposed to put any windows across these bezels here. The one of the really cool features is the capability to restore. We don't have any here, right, do we?
That's a creation. You can cancel that and hit the other button.
Oh, say list. I see. So here we have a bunch of different tasks that we worked on a couple of days ago. And what I can do is I can click one of these and can say restore. And the moment I do this, these tasks, as we say, get rehydrated. So as you see, that was the layout of my screen as I was working on a couple of days back. And without any effort for starting each individual application, I just restored in an Explorer here, and I loaded a specific web page. I loaded this web browser here with a PDF document. I loaded Acrobat Reader, a bunch of different pages that I've been working on last time. So the benefit of this feature is that with very little effort, I can restore, continue on a specific task days later, and it's also very easy to help people switch between different tasks. So for example, when somebody comes in, wants to see a demo, I can just temporarily suspend all the stuff I've been working on and bring up this demo, and when the person leaves, I can shut them all down.
Correct.
So we basically increase the granularity from working on a per-window basis to working on a per-task basis.
That's awesome. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys. Really appreciate that. We got one last group to stop in on, which is our next media group run by Curtis Wong and Stephen Drucker. They take a look at how people are using media today, and particularly as we move more towards digital photography and digital video, and seeing if we can actually sort of create new kinds of interfaces to help people create that media, to edit it, to manage it, to show it and present it in ways that are new and interesting and fun. And actually, I think this is probably one of the most, well, I think these guys have a lot of fun in the Vibe group, but I think the next media group probably has more fun than the other group inside of Microsoft Research. So why don't we walk down the hall and
meet them. Now, in the demos you've been showing me, aren't you scared of competitors taking those ideas and getting them out to the market before at the same time we do?
Am I scared of that? Well, I hope we're good enough that we can get a lot of those things to the market. And maybe some of them will. Part of what we do as a research lab is we have to be open, right? Because, you know, it's really easy to declare yourself to be a research lab and doing research and you never talk to anybody outside and you convince yourself that you're doing good research. The only way you really know whether you're doing good research or not is if you get other people looking at other experts in that area, right, who can kind of work with you, and we're kind of working our way down the hallways here.
A lot of hallways in the research.
Who can work with you and review your work and whose value you trust to to tell you whether you're doing good work or not. So, you know, from our point of view, it's part of our business. We have to be an open research lab. And, you know, part of the risk is in being open is that somebody could actually be in the market for something. But, right. But, you know, we have to do that, right? Otherwise, we're not a real research lab.